and welcome to another Care Home Management Magazine podcast. I'm Alan Rustad, and today we're going to be discussing a subject that has to be a vital ingredient to care home owners wanting to deliver the very best of service to residents, and that is training. But with all the pressure that's on care homes at the moment, is there a danger that training is slipping down the list of priorities? Well, today I'll be discussing that with three people who know a thing or two about training. That's Gary Hook from Edify Training, Connor Shaw from Bizimply, and Paul O'Hagan from Paragon. This podcast is kindly sponsored by RotorCloud, online software that makes managing your care team's rotors, timesheets, and annual leave easy. So let's get started, but to ease ourselves into it, let's do what we always do and have each of you just introduce yourselves and your organisations in 30 seconds or so. So let's begin with Paul. Paul O'Hagan from Paragon. Would you like to introduce yourself for us?
Yeah, hi there. I'm Paul O'Hagan. I'm the Chief Commercial Officer at Paragon Skills. We're a pure play apprenticeship provider focusing predominantly on the care sector, with a particular specialism around adult social care and supporting increasingly children, young people, and the market that seems to be having an increasing demand in that. We support learners of all ages, across all demographics, across England, developing the skills from level two programmes, so entry level apprenticeship programmes, all the way up to senior manager level at level five. Within England, we're the largest provider and voted the number one provider of apprenticeships by the apprentices themselves. So super proud of our achievements over the last few years and what have been challenging times for the sector as a whole.
Gary at Edify, would you like to introduce yourself and Edify?
Yes, of course. Firstly, thank you, Alan, for the invite on the podcast today. It's much appreciated. I'm Gary Hook. I'm the Managing Director of Edify Training. It's our 17th year in business, so proud of that we've survived the various challenges of those years, including obviously COVID for the last couple. We're a broad-based training provider focused pretty heavily on the health and social care sector. We have a broad base of about 150 odd courses. We deliver these via e-learning, virtual, of course, in the modern era. Open access locally, close to us in Maidstone, but predominantly, and our passion really is face-to-face training, training workshops where we can impart skills and knowledge effectively. We're a national provider. We deal with the largest care home groups in the UK, right the way through to the very smallest and everything in between.
Thanks very much indeed, Gary. And finally, Connor at Bizimply. You're into things like making care homes run an awful lot smoother, I think.
Yeah, that's it. Thanks a million, Alan, for your time and a happy new year to you. I'm Connor, I'm CEO of Bizimply. Yeah, you know what? It's interesting. Today, you look at the care sector, like most service sectors, and the operators are, you know, faced with interruption left, right, and centre, interruption to the normal flow of business, whether it be from staff shortages, staff retention, rising costs, increased regulation, and so on. Technology is often put out there as the be-all and end-all answer to all of the evils. As a technologist, I sometimes hate to disappoint in that. However, technology is a tool, and what it does is it enables people and businesses survive and thrive. Businesses still need people in their business. They can't run on technology alone. And so at Bizimply, what we try to do is we merge sort of the business needs and simplification, hence our name, and the idea being to get those shift managers back on the floor to do what they do best with their people and with their residents, and then simplify and I suppose codify some of the administration and so on that happens behind, whether that be from, you know, timesheets to scheduling to shift logs and so on and so forth. And I mean, our ultimate goal is to make every shift run like clockwork.
It's not a bad goal. Well done for that. Okay, well, let's move on and look, I think, first of all, perhaps at apprenticeships, because that's something that doesn't get an awful lot of attention sometimes in the care sector, or at least not as much as attention as it probably deserves. So, Paul, would you like to lead us off? Because apprenticeships are important. What are the state? What's the health of apprenticeships within the care sector at the moment, given all the staffing shortages and all the staffing problems that we know so much about?
Yeah, and this is a question I ask myself every day, because it's an ever-changing landscape, as we know that there are huge challenges across the sector. And I'm sure across Gary and Connor as well, we share some of those pains from those challenges that the sector is certainly feeling. And I think it's important to understand kind of the drivers behind those factors as a starting point to kind of contextualize apprenticeships and where they're heading. And from us, we're seeing a huge pressure across the sector as a whole around organizations' ability to attract new talent into the sector, retain the talent that they've already got, but also encourage existing staff members to upskill, to develop, given the stresses and strains that they're under because of the very well publicised shortages of staff across the sector. And as a result of that, over the last 12 months, actually, when we look at the academic year, the number of apprentices on adult social care programmes has declined 15%. Surprisingly, kind of, we could refer to that as post-pandemic, and the numbers have reduced significantly. And we're seeing that as a shift resulting from essentially people leaving the sector. People leaving the sector and looking for alternatives. And yeah, when we try and contextualize that, we kind of put it into four groups around people have burnt out, that, you know, through the what has been a really challenging last 3 years. People are looking for alternatives and looking for new challenges elsewhere. You know, it's a people-centric business, and those skills are transferable into other sectors. Also, as we know, huge pay pressures across the sector as a whole, and for individuals personally, and that's allowing people, or maybe forcing people actually, to look at alternative sources of income and potentially high paid opportunities. And then we've got the kind of internal competitive landscape. With all of those pressures, organisations are looking to each other to try and recruit those talented, successful staff, and people are moving internally quite significantly. And the fourth one, which is a new one on me and actually has just come to light over the last 6 months, is early retirement. Two-fifths of people aged 55 to 65 over the last, post-pandemic, have chosen to take early retirement. And subsequently, you've got a significant group of individuals that have left the sector. Everybody is then struggling to move up, particularly around the leadership and management space. And as a result, there's significant upheaval across the human capital elements of most care businesses. So from an apprenticeship perspective, it's been a really challenging time, actually, post-pandemic. However, we've managed to kind of buck the trend. So our market share has increased significantly. Our proportion of apprentices in true volumes have increased in their thousands over the last couple of years. And that's principally to do with the client relationships that we work really hard to develop, understanding employers, understanding their challenges, and being able to really demonstrate the value that apprenticeships offer around staff retention and development to make sure that those benefits are aligned to the overall benefits of the organization in terms of service improvement and service provision. So whilst the market has declined from an apprenticeship perspective, we're seeing an increase in the services that we're delivering, which is testament to the quality that I think we offer at Paragon Skills, but also those employers that take the time to really understand those benefits and invest time and effort into truly understanding the value that apprenticeships can offer them as an organisation.
And do you find that employers are grasping that nettle, that they do feel that there is value in apprenticeships long term for them in helping to recruit staff and retain staff?
I think it's a real mix, actually. So the larger care providers have always had a more mature view to developing their staff. And like everything, you know, when we look at this as a kind of jigsaw that we're trying to piece together to support increasing skills across the care sector, but also bringing new people into the care sector, apprenticeships are just one element of that. So the larger care providers have had the luxury of being able to have commercial training offering, internal training offering, plus apprenticeships. And having that rounded approach has absolutely complemented the real benefits and understanding that apprenticeships offer. We've focused a lot on the smaller market, so what we would refer to as the SME market, but those organisations that don't fall into the large care sector providers, so more regional providers. And they really are starting to see the benefits of apprenticeships. Particularly when you look at it statistically, the 85% of individuals that go into an apprenticeship course are more likely to stay with that employer for over 2 years, you know, and in a sector where staff attrition is high and those rates are growing, and the ability to retain people even for a 2 year period, maybe a 3 year period, is hugely important. So I think it's mixed, Alan, actually, in terms of depending on what sector you're talking to and the maturity of that organization's view and how they look to develop their staff.
That's interesting. Let's widen this out then. Gary at Edify, are you finding that what Paul has just been describing, has that come across your desk as well, that there is that greater realization of how important training is given all that we've been through over the last 3 years?
Yeah, I would agree, Alan. The pandemic obviously was a huge breaker in training for people. I think at the time, Skills for Care were pretty insistent that on-site training didn't occur. They came up with some solutions to that and some approved providers to assist with virtual training and the like. But I think all providers, large and small, found it very difficult to stay on top of compliance at that time. We all hopped on and started doing virtual training and the like. But nonetheless, I think as the various lockdowns eased, there was a very large bounce back to face-to-face training. At one point, I think colleagues were saying to me, well, this is it. You know, face-to-face training may not return. We've all made the investments into virtual training and adjusted our lessons and our training plans, et cetera, to make that as effective as possible. And clients have got used to that. Trainers have enjoyed not having to travel to site and wrestle with various transport networks, et cetera. We're virtual now. That's the modern training environment. And that's not been our experience at all. We've seen these last year, as various elements of the pandemic have eased back and lockdown has eased back, there's a huge bounce back to people really wanting to get back into the classroom, experience that premium standard of face-to-face training delivery and get their skills and knowledge back up. Because I think people were beginning, employers were beginning to see that skills and knowledge were dropping off within their staff groups.
That's interesting. Mm-hmm. And Connor, you're obviously there supplying software to care homes in great numbers. Do you find training is something they bring up with you when you're discussing that with them?
Yeah, I mean, if I would take it a bit from the learning perspective, as I think training is part of an overall learning environment. And it's kind of interesting what Gary said there about online learning. It's a little bit like pre-pandemic and pre-online and all that kind of stuff. Training exists together with books. Like you could potentially read a book and learn about something, but actually you didn't, because actually it was that human interaction that I think was the key difference. And I think that's probably why, Gary, you're seeing people who are coming back to classrooms, because they want to have that social interaction together with the learning experience. And I think we're going to end up with a blended approach to all of this. I was involved in a training organization 20 odd years ago, and we talked about blended learning. But we've certainly seen the operators are talking to us more from a point of view of how do I make sure I retain my people? And you'd only have to go back into the hierarchy of needs and self-esteem. If somebody is feeling that they're being developed and grown, they are much more likely to stay with that employer. And I think, Paul, some of your statistics from the apprenticeships, people say for more than 2 years if they've gone through an apprenticeship with a particular organization, because we do have that loyalty to people who have looked after us. And if you're in an organization that where you feel valued, where you believe in the cause, and you feel yourself you're growing, you're more than likely to stay there, even if the guy down the road is offering you 5, 10, 15, 20% more money, because there's a lot more to it than that. And I think that's really at the core of this, that training and development and learning has to be at the core of the manager's day-to-day job, where possibly over the past couple of years, managers have got very transactional. You know, we had to get the job done because we've been under such constraint. And now we need to take off those cloaks and move forward and get back out on the floor.
I'm sure that's important. And Paul, do you find that you're having to justify the importance of apprenticeships to win over clients, or are you dealing with a pretty receptive audience most of the time?
We're in quite a privileged position, actually. We never have any negative conversations around apprenticeships. Organisations absolutely understand the value of them. It may just not be the right time for them at that moment. So, apprenticeships, the government and the policymakers are working hard to increase the visibility of them. We, as independent training provider, are working super hard with those larger organisations to increase the visibility. But to Connor and Gary's points there, I think it's absolutely right. I think the critical element of this is the support from the employer, but not just the owner manager, not just the overarching organization, but those specific line managers buying into the principles behind helping their staff become better in the job roles that they have chosen to work within. And the critical element behind that is making sure that, one, the infrastructure is in place to support that learning and development environment, both formally. So as Gary said, in terms of face-to-face, I'm with Connor. I think a blended solution is absolutely the way to go in terms of supporting that, but also the informal environment. So most learning actually takes place in the informal environment, which is why apprenticeships are so successful in their offerings, because it's, you know, in place, experiential. You're learning off people that have been there and done that. And consequently, organizations are really looking at apprenticeships as a vehicle, a component within their toolkit to help that retention and that attraction piece. But it's complementary to the services and the training that the likes of Gary and Edify support. It's not in isolation of, you know, it's absolutely a complementary blended approach with buy-in from the leadership, but real ownership from the management that makes a difference.
And are there any particular roles that are particularly attractive to offer as apprenticeships? So is there any role that comes out as the top of the pile, if you like, for what people want to go into?
Yeah, you know, those entry level, care support workers, healthcare support worker type roles are absolutely ideal for apprenticeships. Those with a passion, those with an underlying desire to go and make a difference, those with compassion and empathy, and the programs on offer. The interesting element about an apprenticeship program is that, you know, it's a program of learning and education. So it's a minimum of 12 months. And you've really got to be committed and motivated in order to be able to support that. And that's ideal for those entry-level roles. What we're seeing is an increasing opportunity to help individuals understand the pathways that would allow them to progress and develop through apprenticeships and remain within the care sector. So not only are we seeing those entry-level roles, but now registered managers, nurses are looking at, so how do I complement the skills I've got with maybe some leadership and management skills? How do I become more of a rounded professional? It's going to help, to Connor's point, support me understand the motivations, the requirements within the business, become a better manager to support the individuals that I'm helping on a day-to-day basis a little bit better than I have been.
Yeah, that's interesting. Let's move on then to Gary at Edify, because Gary, I know you're particularly, you find important that the quality that's being offered, because I'm sure, dare I say it, there are some rogue traders out there who aren't delivering the sort of professional approach to the job that they should be. You've been in this business long enough, I'm sure, that do you find that care home operators can spot quality when you go and talk to them, or is there a danger that they're looking just for the cheapest option?
It's a very good question, Alan. I'll come to that, if I may. Just going back to the original invite from Care Home Management when Edify was first invited on. Obviously, it's Care Home Management magazine, isn't it? And this is a podcast for that. And therefore, you know, our audience should largely, I would imagine, be care home managers. And initially, somewhat tongue-in-cheek, I said, well, my topic will be that training helps you sleep better. And I certainly don't mean that within our training sessions, the staff will be falling asleep. Not at all. We're talking to the managers, aren't we? And, you know, this is one of the toughest jobs in our society, I think. Really, really demanding, a huge responsibility. And, you know, I thought in some way, it's a little like running a large hotel, isn't it? Whether it's 20, 30, 50, 70 bed. It's a little bit like a hotel. You have all of the responsibilities for the facilities, for the grounds, for staff, for preparing and providing food and beverages. But not just that. Obviously, you've got the residents, in my analogy of a hotel. Well, they're the residents of the care home. Unlike a hotel, they're the most vulnerable people in our society. So you have that responsibility. You have the added complication that you've got controlled drugs on site. The pay isn't fantastic. And there's a huge amount of regulation around running a care home. So it's not for the faint-hearted. And so my initial kind of analogy would be that perhaps it's not the best role to have the best night's sleep. Well, where does training come into this? Well, I think it's one of the tools that a manager can use to get a couple of hours sleep back. It's not the only tool. There's lots and lots of other problems they face, but it's one of the key things that regulators look at. And my proposition, my more logical, sensible proposition would be that care home managers should seek great value in their training. And obviously behind that is not just to look at the lowest cost proposition. And by great value, I mean the goal here of training isn't to complete the training matrix, to have ticks in all the statutory and mandatory boxes for every member of staff. The goal in seeking great value from training is to provide optimal care. If we keep that in mind as always the goal, then using training as one of the tools to achieve that, then all those boxes in the training matrix will naturally be ticked. You know, training is the path towards the end goal. And if we seek, you know, best value in that, it's a natural outcome.
And when you say it's a natural outcome, when you go and knock on their door and offer your training services to them, what are the first questions they ask? Do they look at the bottom line and see that's going to cost me so much, or do they actually go through with you what they're looking for? Because I would imagine not all care homes are the same.
Absolutely not. And, you know, it's my observation of 17 years of visiting care homes that you can get an appreciation, a feel for how the discussion's going to go by how you are greeted. And there's a great correlation between CQC ratings, the feel of the home when you visit it, and their commitment to training. And that would be my observation is if the greeting is professional, if it's not chaotic, if you are greeted courteously, signed in correctly, if the manager is ready for you, if they have prepared suitable amount of time, these are all great indicators to me, along with, you know, the feel in the home. Is it chaotic? Is it noisy? Are people looking stressed and distressed? Or is there a calm feel about the place, that things are organized and professional, and that the management's on top of things? And this naturally, yes, for me, over the years has rolled into very good discussions around planning effective training, which seeks to identify where the strengths are within the organization and where the weaknesses are, and then apply the budget, which is obviously constrained and limited, it's a finite resource, to apply that budget for the most effective care possible.
And I would imagine also that you're looking to release management time by having better trained staff who can take on many of the other roles.
Yeah, better trained staff, more confident. More confidence means they need less coaching, less mentoring, less supervision. All of that runs all the way back up to the manager, who then has more time available. We talked a lot about, obviously, retention of staff already, and I think there's more discussions to be had around that. But staff that feel valued and confident and invested in will stay with an organisation. If you think about the cost of recruitment in hard terms, cash terms, but if you also think about it in terms of time taken to recruit staff, again, that's a feeder all the way back up to top management, time back, and back to my initial slight tongue in cheek. That's another hour's sleep back, isn't it?
Yeah. To support that, Gary, as well, what we're seeing is in an increasingly transparent sector, around quality, whether it's quality of provision of care settings or quality of service providers to those settings, there's an increasing transparency with, online reviews, social media, undercover reporting, all of these types of experiences that we're all exposed to these days. The biggest question we get asked is, how do apprenticeships help support, embed the values of us as an organization across all of the employees? So how do we create a standard above and beyond where we are today through supporting a program of education that sets those expectations, but also creates this environment of continuous improvement and being acceptable that we need to continue be looking at how do we improve the services? How do we become more effective and efficient? How do we use technology to give us more time back in order to actually concentrate on what's really important are those individuals that are in the setting and their experience, because they will be really relaying that back to, yes, they're the customer, but also the individuals paying for it, the customers as well. And in an increasingly transparent landscape, quality is absolutely paramount. What's pleasing to see is a lot of those providers that didn't necessarily share the same values or have the same quality, unfortunately, or fortunately, don't survive in this type of environment these days. I support everything Gary's saying there around you walk into a setting, you get a feel for the organization and how well the conversation's going to go.
I'm sure, Connor, you find that too, don't you? Whenever you're walking into a care home or anywhere, that initial, 10 to 30 seconds as you walk through the door is shaping everything.
Absolutely, absolutely. And the interesting thing is you can go into two from the same group, and even though from the very top they're getting the same messaging, you can get a feel. And I put it always down to the sort of the quality of the management on the ground. And that's because that's where the rubber hits the road and where it comes home to roost. And you do get that kind of that sort of experience. And one of the interesting things, Paul, that you mentioned there was about how your apprenticeships and also I think technology allows some of those smaller homes and SME sector to compete with the corporate sector, the much bigger sector, because actually there is a leveling there, and it is sort of interesting how that plays out in this, because actually when you go into the individual home, whether it's part of a corporate or it's a local owner operated, that quality is what's going to shine through and is what's going to make the residents happy, the families happy, and potentially the paymasters, whether it's NHS or private, it doesn't really matter. They want to make sure that they're not getting any hassle, whether it be from social media and so on. And the interesting thing about training in this is, there is unfortunately an awful lot of drags on that manager, these time drags, whether it be, admin in terms of approving timesheets, building rotas, writing shift logs, all that kind of stuff. That's a drag. Admin drags time. Now, we try to provide some technology to kind of take some of that admin away or the drag away. Hiring drags time. It takes a long time to hire because it's a critical important. It's a very, very important thing. So if you can extend that retention period from 2 years to 3 years, you just cut a third of your hiring time down. And this is real time because you're probably going to be interviewing four or five people for every role and so on and so forth. That drags time. Compliance drags time. Having to make sure that you're filling out the CQC stuff and making sure that you're there for those health and safety, fire, insurance, HMRC, all that compliance drags time out. Training and development returns time. You get time back very, very quickly. I mean, if you send a few of your people onto one of Gary's, I would say schedule them to go so that it's in their schedule, onto one of Gary's courses, or you've got some people on Paul's apprenticeships, they will come back better able to do their jobs. Therefore, you as the manager aren't having to repair the damage or fix or do side-by-side stuff. They're more motivated. They're going to tell their colleague beside them, oh, no, you're not doing that right. I just was on the training course. Here's, oh, yeah, I remember doing that. All that kind of stuff. And that just is a self, that's a kind of a virtuous circle of good feeling. And I think if you get that atmosphere in the organization, people are happier, they're smiling, they're walking through reception when a family come in to have a look at this. This looks like a lovely place to be. So therefore, everything is positive. And you know, and it does, you know, two people, management are two things, managers and good quality training and development. They're core to making the whole sector work better. And it can be done at the SME sector as well as the corporate sector now.
Yeah, I think it's both. Big question that we look to answer is how do we support those organizations increase their productivity, whether that's at a management level or whether that's at an individual care level? How do we support those individuals, develop the skills to give them more time back? As you quite rightly say, Connor, it is all about efficiency. It's all about productivity and improving that level of care. And that has to be driven from the management team.
And does that come in your experience as well, Gary, that productivity element is something that you're selling in and being able to prove to clients?
Yeah, I mean, they are the stakes, Alan, aren't they? Productivity and efficiency, they are the outcomes of a really motivational training session. Gents, I'm not adverse to the idea of blended. We do blended learning. Obviously, we are living in the future now, so I'm not sitting here saying it's face to face and it has to be that way. I think blended learning is part of that discussion around value, Alan, which is perhaps my key theme here today. We can use blended learning so that we can get the knowledge part done, you know, via e-learning. But when we really want to leave people with hands-on skills, motivated to go and care for people better, to leave the training session really feeling like they're supported and they have the knowledge and the skills, you know, that face-to-face element is critical. In the middle of COVID, it was particularly difficult for training providers to do topics like moving and handling and basic life support. And obviously, that's, you know, two topics that are really great to deliver by face-to-face training. And, you know, part of that bounce back that I mentioned earlier on is in those two topics in particular.
And from your experience also, Gary, do you find that the staff are beating a path to the manager's door saying, I want training, or is it the other way around? Are the managers saying, you need more training? How does it work?
I think it's a bit of both, in all honesty. It would depend on the organisation. I think when staff have had you know, real top quality training, they want more of it. That's certain. You know, we see that on our feedback sheets, that if they have a training session that they feel is exceptional, they will say, we want this particular trainer again and again. We want them back and we want more of this type of training. And we do see those comments about less e-learning, less virtual, more of this, please. So I think it does come from staff upwards. But I think also managers that really do, you know, commit to this idea of seeking out the very best value, the best outcome for the money, for the budget that's involved, they will drive that.
You're listening to the Care Home Management Magazine podcast.
Providing the best quality care means having the right people in the right place at the right time. And that's exactly where Rotacloud can help. Rotacloud makes managing your care team's rotas, attendance, and annual leave easy. With its simple drag-and-drop planner, you'll be creating rotas in minutes, while its built-in budgeting tools mean you'll know exactly how much you're spending on staffing before sending the rota out. It could even help you reduce your agency bill. Start your 30-day free trial today by visiting rotacloud.com/chm. And see how much easier organizing your care team can be.
Connor, you're finding that obviously you're not directly involved in training, although the software that you provide does get very much involved with it. But again, it's what I think is coming through loud and clear in all this is that it's getting people well enough trained so that they can make a difference to what's going on, that it lifts the whole sector and it lifts the whole individual care home right up.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, that's the whole thing. And it's kind of interesting. I would completely agree with Gary. I think the best training is the pure training bit in the classroom. But then, of course, it's what happens when that recently, freshly minted, trained operator comes out of that training. What happens then when they take that out onto the floor, if you like? And that's where I think the sort of, you know, you have that sort of thing about the total learning, 10% of it happens in the classroom, 20% happens in side-by-side coaching, and 70% is actually on the job. And Paul alluded to this. That's where we feel that our role in terms of ensuring that people have a visible schedule of work over a period of time within which we would recommend training time is put, and it's color-coded and it's seen. And then also from a point of view of that manager building, that making sure that the best care provision is provided, that the balance of skills within a shift is also there, so that side-by-side learning can happen, that if somebody has recently been trained into something, they're not left on a shift on their own doing that for a period of time. They've got a colleague who actually already has that also working that shift with them until such time as their confidence builds. Because, you know, we've all gone to training course and say, wow, that was great. And then you go out of the room and you can't quite remember some of it, or you're looking back over the notes and it's a little bit disconcerting. And then you can say, whoa, I'm not going to try that again. So you want that confidence. And that's where I think smart scheduling and ensuring that you have that visibility out further, the training is in it, the side-by-side coaching is in it, and the manager's role, the manager actually has the time to do it as well, which is where all of this fits right through. And you know, and that comes to like really simple schedule, like visibility of skills and color coding on the shift. That can be either it's online, but it can be printed off. It's in the staff room. People can see who's working when, what are they doing, and why are they doing that? Because it fits with whatever the training or the skills improvement goal is, I suppose, of that month, of that quarter, of that year. And similarly, it's the record keeping to make sure that when people have done a training course, the record is kept, it's recorded on their system. They can see they've got it. It's also seen at head office. That kind of stuff is very important, because sometimes, you know, you need refreshers and you put expiry dates on these. Nobody misses their expiry date because it's, you know what, it's got a date and it pops up. You know, Gary gets a call to say, oh, we need to bring in another trainer to train another bunch of people, or there's a refresh or whatever it is. So it's all very much around, like, we kind of do the boring bit so that managers don't have to do the boring bit.
Well,
thankfully, actually, we don't do it. We get little bits and bytes and electronics to do it, which is good. But that's really what it's all about. And it also fills all the compliance stuff. And there's a lot of compliance training to be done as well. I mean, you talk about manual handling and health and safety. That's all compliance. God, 30 years ago, people used to just lift up a box. Now we know how to do it.
You know, I was going to say, just from the point of view of the trainee, this must obviously lead on to benefits in terms of work-life balance, doesn't it, as well?
Well, visibility is one of the biggest work-life balance requirements. People in shift workers, the single thing that actually, one of the biggest things that makes them leave a role is, I just never really knew when I was going to be working. You know, I couldn't plan my life. I don't mind doing 40. I don't mind doing 50 hours. I don't mind being asked to do, can you do it? As long as I get enough notice of it that I can organize, whether it's my childcare, whether it's my football, whatever that it is I do when I'm not working, you know, I like to have that visibility. And you know, what we have found is as people implement it, simply they start to get that. They get that visibility out further. People can see it on their phone. They can see it, you know, it's accessible easy. You don't work out. You don't find out when your next shift is when you come into work. It's on your phone if that's what you want. And it's that kind of just overall, and that's the, that comes back to that sense of feeling valued. Does my employer value me? Do they treat me with that respect? And that respect can come from, they give me decent working hours. I'm properly qualified to do the job I'm being asked. I'm not getting stressed, overly stressed. We like a little bit of stress. But I'm feeling confident within my stress that, you know, there's a lot to do here, but I'm fully armed to do it. And that's a great feeling, actually. And that's the feeling I think that those good care homes that Gary alluded to actually all have that. They're never so calm that it looks like there's nothing going on. They're busy control. And I think that's what we ultimately want in all our businesses, because that plays the productivity. And productivity, you know, productivity can be deemed sometimes a bad word because it's seen as profitability. But it isn't actually. Productivity is making sure you're getting the most out so that you can actually deliver the best.
I think this feeds into my theme of value from training, which is, you know, trainers are performers at heart, and they love an audience. And, you know, one of the things we look for is to try and maximize the attendance within the courses. Nothing worse than having three people sat in front of you. And again, going back to those care homes that are managed really effectively, what we see is consistently high levels of attendance. And obviously your product and products in terms of scheduling can be at the heart of that to make sure that people really know what's coming up, what they need to attend and why. And they're there in numbers. You know, the very best training sessions are where you've got a really good interactive group, all bouncing off each other, sharing ideas, sharing experiences. And I think your product sounds like it would have a really good place in that.
And Paul, coming back to you, you're dealing with people right at the very beginning of their career in social care. They're going to want to feel valued as soon as their apprenticeship, well, right from the word go, but once their apprenticeships are over, they're going to want to feel that they're a big part of the team and that they've got a big contribution to make.
Absolutely. And I think it's all about looking at how you maximize that, the old adage of return on investment that you're making, whether that's hard, tangible pounds and pence, whether that's time, whether that's, you know, management time, individual time. Unless you make that full investment and that full commitment, by having the infrastructure in place to really support the outcomes that you are looking to achieve through that point in time of education, through knowledge, skills, you know, and behavioral skills that you're looking to transfer. Unless you're really willing to make that investment, you get very little return from it. So having an overarching infrastructure that is supportive of learning, both in the formal environment, so in Gary's, you know, face-to-face classroom environment, in the informal environment, when individuals return to the workplace, but actually you are embedding those skills. You recognize that an individual may be on a journey to developing skills, and you have a management infrastructure that supports that, recognizes that, but also affords the time for those individuals to make progress. There's no point training somebody to utilize a particular, you know, or adopt a particular skill set unless you then support them in the workplace to really embed that. It's a little bit like there's no point investing in Connor's technology if you don't train anybody how to use it. You know, it's a waste of investment. And it has to be continuous investment as well, because in 6 months' time, 12 months' time, 18 months' time, those individuals you did train originally may well have left. They may be in different job roles. They may not be transferring those skills down. So investment in training isn't a one-off intervention. It's an absolute ethos that has to come from the management team, as I've said before, in terms of understanding really the impact that it can have in the business and those influencing factors that will really provide that security around the investment you're making so you can recognize that return.
And Gary, I'm sure you're always keen to get them coming back for more for obvious professional reasons, but it's not a particularly hard sell, that, is it?
Well, I think if we're achieving the outcomes we've all been discussing today, then, you know, providers are going to be looking to get more of the same, aren't they? You know, if they can see the win, why not have more of it?
Well, gentlemen, thank you all very much indeed for your time today. I'm afraid that's all we've got time for. My thanks go to Gary Hook from Edify Training, Connor Shaw from Bizimply, and Paul O'Hagan from Paragon. This has been the Care Home Management Magazine special podcast on training, kindly sponsored by RotorCloud, online software that makes managing your care team's rotas, timesheets, and annual leave easy. I hope you've enjoyed our discussion today. As ever, we have more podcasts on the way for you, so I hope you'll join us again very soon. But for now, goodbye.